Good morning, Tacoma Park and DC area, and anyone listening online. I am Julie Hantman. I come on the air and online about every 3 months to talk with guests here in the studio and all of you about climate change. Last summer, I've covered flooding and also heat in the DC and Maryland area. In the fall, climate candidates and climate art. And in the winter, DC's big new renewables law. Climate change is a serious topic. Community radio is one place we can really come together, talk about it seriously and honestly, but also hopefully. Public conversations are needed, and here on community radio, we can think together about what we can do. Today's episode is Climate Spring, Soil and Spirit, with my terrific guest, Betsy Taylor, hello, who came in even though she had a 101 fever last night. Thank you, Betsy. And you are a longtime resident of Tacoma Park, is that right?
Over 30 years.
Oh, my. And are you a listener of Tacoma Radio?
I am a listener, a supporter, came to the founding party.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Well, and you are also a longtime climate leader, wearing probably every hat imaginable, founder of organizations addressing sustainability and frontline activism. You train youth leaders to be active in the climate movement, and you are the chair, or a chair, of the board of 350 Action and president of Breakthrough Strategies and Solutions. And today, we are here with Betsy to talk about three areas that are close to your heart. New movement to green the practice of agriculture, the Green New Deal, and our connection to nature and faith, and how to collectively strengthen our spirits. Just a little aside before we get into it. Since I do this sort of seasonally, I kind of looked at the calendar and saw two holidays coming up. The first very soon, Earth Day, April 22nd. I'm sure listeners are mostly aware. Check out what you can learn and what you can do. This year, the theme is Protect Our Species. Then in May is Mother's Day, and I'm a mom, and I've been active on climate as a mom. And just as we speak, there's really a huge upswelling of mothers and fathers to stand up for climate action. It's not new, but it's really coming together.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, the Parents for the Future, I've heard of groups from 16 countries and many more organizations. The U.S. Affiliated organization of that is launching tomorrow at the UN, Our Kids Climate. Mm-hmm. And Betsy, you're going to talk about youth later. I feel like this parent movement is an obvious corollary.
And absolutely.
Parents and their youth.
Parents and grandparents.
And yeah. Grandparents. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Yeah. Let's go into our first topic, which I called greening agriculture. I know the term, the official term is regenerative agriculture. In my mind's eye, when I think of reducing carbon emissions to stave off global warming, I usually think of tackling the big stuff like coal plants that you can see, natural gas pipelines that go through communities, high emission vehicles. You are saying look down at the soil, and that if we change our approach to the soil that grows our crops, we can slash carbon emissions. Let's take our time. I just want to ask you very naively, I'm a city girl. Dirt I get. What is soil?
Soil is a living organism. It's, as I've learned more and more about soil, it's so magical. One teaspoon apparently has over a billion microbial elements. We are really just learning about the microbial content of soil. But soil is very much a living thing. And actually, in the context of climate, the more we can support that life, the more we can pull carbon emissions into that soil.
You take it for granted, but it's more complex.
It's all sorts of elements that are being pulled out of the atmosphere, as well as sands and content. But it is a great question. I probably couldn't give you a scientific definition, but I can tell you it's a very living thing, and that the major universities now have shifted from focusing on the chemistry of soil, you know, how much nitrogen, how much phosphorus, to really like, what is it? And what is this microbial thing going on there?
It's a living thing. I love that. Okay, again, in my or our collective mind's eye, when I think of farming, agriculture, I think of farmers tilling the land, riding tractors. It sounds like this whole movement of regenerative agriculture wants to transform that. Can you tell us about regenerative agriculture?
Sure. So regenerative agriculture, sometimes people refer to it as agroecological practices, climate smart practices. I'll call it regenerative ag. This is an approach to agriculture where you're really doing three things with the soil. You're keeping the soil covered throughout the year. So there aren't any bare gardens or land. So, for example, using cover crops or using something to cover the soil. You're feeding the soil. So you're using compost or manure or, again, legumes to support the soil. And you are not disrupting it. You're not going down into it. Because what we found is that the soil is full of this life, including mycorrhizal fungi. And the stronger the soil and the soil aggregates, the more we can sequester that carbon. But not only that, regenerative agriculture is, of course, about addressing the climate threat. But when you have these practices, and there are many more, California has named 34 practices, USDA, even more, that help build healthy soil, that when you do this, you also hold water in the soil, you improve yields, you support biodiversity and pollinators. So it's just kind of a no-regret strategy.
I've heard of the term no-till. Tilling turns over the soil.
Right. And I grew up tilling. My dad had us gardening. We all had rototillers. I loved rototilling. It's a really bad idea. So I have four community garden plots here in Tacoma Park. One is in the backyard of a friend on Willow Avenue, a little tenant farmer there. We don't till at all. We add compost and aged organic horse manure, and we go down into the soil maybe 4 inches, and you don't need to till. And in fact, when you do till, you're disrupting the soil's ability to be productive.
That's a huge sort of, so we've been doing agriculture wrong. Can you tell us about carbon, soil's connection to carbon again?
Land holds more carbon even than the ocean. And the ocean's been holding a lot of carbon for us, you know, kind of delaying the real impacts of climate change by absorbing a huge amount of carbon out of the atmosphere. But land wants carbon. Carbon wants to be there. That's where it wants to be. And we've lost it. So since we began really major industrialization a couple hundred years ago, Woods Hole Research Center estimates we've lost at least 133 gigatons of carbon from the land through tilling, through development, through deforestation. And we need to put it back. Imagine an empty bathtub. We've emptied it of what it wants to have in there. We wouldn't need to put it back in. And so the soil wants carbon. And farmers do too. And by the way, this is kind of taking us back to our basic photosynthesis lessons in high school. Plants absorb carbon and they emit oxygen. So our biomass, our trees, our plants pull that carbon down into their roots to create their roots. And the deeper the soil, the deeper it goes down. So that's kind of how it works. By the way, the soil does respirate carbon too. It puts it back up. So there's this cycle going on with photosynthesis where the carbon comes down, and then microbial activity releases carbon, but there is a net gain. You don't release all of it, and that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get as much carbon to stay in that soil as possible. So the more we can, for example, here in Tacoma Park, a really easy thing everybody could do, put mulch around your tree trunks. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not agriculture, but by putting just a little bit of mulch around your tree trunks, you help that tree sequester so much more carbon. Mm-hmm. And with your gardens, don't till. Mm-hmm. Just use a hoe that would go down 4, 5, 6 inches at the most. And there's even new ways to plant potatoes where you don't have to dig down deep. Mm-hmm. It's actually really fun when you get into this to learn how to do it. We do know that fertilizer disrupts the biology of the soil, so we want to minimize the use of any synthetic product. So organic regenerative is kind of the highest standard, but for some commodity crop farmers, they're still going to have to transition away from that. They can't do it overnight. But the practices are basic conservation agriculture. That's cover crops, crop rotation. Crop rotation feeds your soil by putting legumes on the soil that puts natural nitrogen back into the soil. No-till. And greatly reducing your synthetic inputs, but also things like silviculture, where you and integrate a few trees in with your crops. That's huge in terms of carbon sequestration, but also compost application. And well, I know we're going to talk about that a little bit more, but compost application has a massive impact on our ability to pull carbon into the soil. And then in tropical areas, they talk, there's something called agroforestry, which is just wonderful, where you're integrating trees like nut trees and crops and a few animals in a kind of a closed loop system where you're taking that animal manure, that food waste, applying it to the soil, building the soil. The trees are giving you a revenue source, but you're also sequestering carbon. So this polyculture, multi-tiered type farming is probably the highest impact way of sequestering carbon.
Okay. So you work hard to keep soil healthy. You do stuff to keep it healthy. You prevent practices or stop practices that make it unhealthy. And then carbon stays in and all sorts of other things, nutrients are there to do the work that pesticides, fertilizer, and other things that you would normally use become less and less necessary.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is we have an agricultural system that has been dominated by big chemistry, big agribusiness that has been pushing its products since the post-World War II era. And that period is coming to an end. The UN says we only have 60 years left of healthy soil in the world. We have to change, and everyone sees that, but there will be a political fight over it because our subsidies are continuing in the Farm Bill to largely go towards things that are destroying the soil.
Wow. So you need healthy soil for feeding the world, even separate and apart from stopping climate change. Okay. It's kind of like going back to the way farmers used to
do things. It's really ancient wisdom. And some of the groups that are doing the best carbon sequestration are indigenous communities that have been approaching this, you know, forever. But of course, this is a global movement now. There are really exciting efforts going on. Finland has 100 trials going on. South Africa is doing amazing things. India, you know, they have 6 million farmers now doing zero chemical farming and trying to pull carbon into the land. It's really fun. It's really hopeful.
It is. What's the evidence for it?
Oh my goodness. UN held a conference in 2017 with 500 scientists from around the world to ask that question exactly. What does this work? Is this real? And I was there. And they looked at everything, you know, how much carbon removes from the soil, what really works, how do we really know how long, what if the farmers start going back to tilling, all these questions. But what they concluded was we absolutely can pull carbon pollution out of the atmosphere and put it in the soil where it will do an enormous amount of good. And more recently, the estimates have been that we can put 1.5 to maybe up to 15 gigatons. That is a massive amount of carbon emissions back into the soil, but we need a global call to action to really bring this to scale.
Okay, let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll delve a little more into the feasibility.
Plowing these fields in the hot summer sun. Over by the gate, Lordy, here she comes with a basket full of chicken and a big cold jug of sweet tea. I make a little room and she climbs on up. Open up a throttle and stir a little dust. Just look at her face, she ain't a fool of me. She thinks my tractor's sexy.
I'm Julie Hantman with my guest, Betsy Taylor of Breakthrough Strategies and Solutions, talking about climate change on Tacoma Radio, WOWDLP 94.3 FM. So I guess farmers like their tractors, like the song was saying. What are the valid critiques of the ambitious goal or the technology and the drive to do all of this kind of fast?
There are many. How do we help farmers make this transition quickly? And there really needs to be a financial support for them, at least in the first few years as they transition away from their tractors, from tilling, from conventional synthetic inputs to the use of compost, the use of a range of things that feed the soil that are not synthetic chemicals. So finance is needed, and there are some really interesting things happening there I'm happy to talk about. I think another challenge is we don't actually know it all. We don't have all the scientific information on this yet. Like, there are very different kinds of soils, different landscapes. How does this work in a savanna? How does this work in a prairie, a rangeland, or a croplands? What the scientists have said is, despite imperfect knowledge, we must act and we must move. And the farmers are gravitating to this because it's improving yields and management of water.
Is there funding for this, adequate funding?
No, but there's really exciting models being put together. So one model is ecosystem service payments, because when you build healthy soil, it does help mitigate the carbon problem. It does help mitigate for climate change, but it also provides support for pollinators, food security, a range of biodiversity, and absolutely helps clean water. You know, the synthetic chemicals in agriculture are the number one polluter of our watersheds. The Chesapeake Bay, the Potomac River, the Mississippi, the runoff from agriculture is killing us. When you build these healthy soils, it helps filter that water. So, payment for ecosystem services, there are companies and systems being put in place around the world for that. And another model, actually General Mills, with Annie's, and probably a favorite product of a lot of local moms and dads, is an organic product. They are paying their farmers a premium to use regenerative agriculture practices.
That's really good sign. There was a bomb cyclone affecting the Great Plains in the middle of March, and I just saw that severe weather and likely flooding is going to hit again in Nebraska and Dakotas. And that's the breadbasket.
Yeah.
That's where a lot of our acreage of farming is. If that's going to happen again and maybe keep happening, can these areas really survive, much less take innovative steps to transform what they're doing? What do you think?
Well, the sad news is that farmers are getting hammered, and we are not doing enough to take care of, particularly our small and mid-sized farmers. Midwest farmers are filing for Chapter 12 bankruptcy at unprecedented levels. But one of the more positive notes, and I talked to about three different farmers out there in the last few days, those using regenerative practices are managing for water much more than those who are not. When you till, when you fill your soil with chemicals, the water can't penetrate. The soil's hard. It's not the same soil. And so the water can't penetrate, whereas in the soil that's been fed with compost, with cover crops, and not tilled, it's rich. You can get your hands into it and soak in the water. So that's been a conversation out there.
There's a win-win-win-win, it seems like.
Yes, but at the same time, we have to be honest. These impacts are coming at us fast. There's not a farmer in the country that's not dealing with climate impacts right now.
Right. So hard work ahead. Let's talk about composting, which sounds like it's something people can do that almost imitates, right, this sort of making healthy soil and actually contributes to reducing climate change. Let's just have a short musical break, and we'll come back and hear an interview with another expert that we've got on tape here.
All day long, words like to wiggle, they really know the squiggle. Digging in the middle, they can inch along in the sunshine and the rain, munching every grain. Digging makes a drain, keeps the soil strong. Dancing the world, wiggle wiggle to her song. Dancing the world, wiggle wiggle all day long.
I'm Julie Hantman, speaking with Betsy Taylor of Breakthrough Strategies and Solutions. We've been talking about regenerative agriculture and climate change. We have some other topics coming up, too, here on Tacoma Radio, WOWDLP 94.3 FM, and streaming at tacomaradio.org. Right now, we're going to turn to this tape that I have, a pre-recorded interview produced by Danya Abdelhamid, who went to talk to Brenda Platt. She's director of the Composting for Community Project in the Institute for Local Self-Reliance here in D.C. Danya edited this down to a compelling series of points. So if you think you know compost, just listen carefully anyway and stay with it. It's about 4 minutes, I think. Here's Brenda Platt.
Composting has been going on for, of course, eons. The Mayans have been composting for, like, you know, probably thousands of years, or they did. Composting is when you take materials like food scraps, yard trimmings, maybe even some paper, and you process it into compost, which is a soil amendment. It is not soil. It can be used as a mulch, like on top around your plantings. You can use it in a mix with potting soil. Compost is rich in carbon and organic matter. And so when you put it in the soil, it's that humus, that glue-like substance that holds it together, is keeping the carbon in the soil. Food scraps converting into compost is one of the best short-term strategies for stemming climate change. When you put rotting material like food scraps into a landfill, especially in anaerobic conditions without oxygen, it just creates methane, which is over a 100-year time horizon is like 84 times more potent than carbon dioxide. So very serious greenhouse gas. I believe that if we really focus on that, it will buy us the extra 10 years we need to transition to a low carbon economy. Unlike a lot of the other strategies, which may require big infrastructure, it is something that we can do in every community in the country. Many cities have for many, many decades already been doing really well on green waste or yard trimmings. And what's new in recent years and growing is giving, let's say, households a bin to collect their food scraps. And there is something like 300 programs around the country now serving 5 million households. The city of Tacoma Park in Maryland is one of them. There's not that many in Maryland yet. The food scraps that the city collects is taken to a neighboring county, Prince George's, where it's composted at a new state-of-the-art facility. Some other cities like San Francisco, and there's a handful of others, have made food scrap collection mandatory, like the recycling programs, and we're not there yet in Tacoma Park. So it's an opt-in program, it's not a mandatory program, and not everybody has a bucket. There's a lot of ways to do composting. When you're doing it locally, you're engaging the community. If you're doing it at school, and you've got kids that take food scraps, and they make compost, and they put it in their garden to grow more food that then they eat, it's the whole food loop, it's the whole food system. There's nothing more powerful than teaching kids where food comes from, how the food scraps that once grew in the ground can go back into the ground to grow more food, and how important that is. And the other thing I'll mention that's really important for engaging youth is really climate change right now, because in the face of intractable problems, it's too easy for us to descend into despair, and we really need to have these things that we could be making a difference on. If we're lucky, we all come into contact with food scraps 3 times a day. So it's really something that everybody can get involved with at whatever level they can.
That was an interesting interview. There were some big claims there. If we all compost, we can buy some time. Do you agree? Composting is a big deal. Tell
composting
me.
Is a really big deal. One of the things that I do in my life, our firm does several things, but we do advise some philanthropists, and we've recently put out a philanthropic guide for regenerative agriculture. And the data on composting is really exciting. We funded a professor, Wendy Silver at Berkeley, and she's done 10 years of trials that show if you just put a half an inch of, or I think it's actually a quarter of an inch of compost on fields, that field will, with a one-time application, will pull carbon into the soil for 100 years. It's really tremendous. And also, as Brenda pointed out, by capturing our food waste, we're avoiding methane release. So I'll just say one other thing here. The Carbon Neutral Cities Alliance, based out of California, is a network of the leading cities in the world. They've identified capturing food waste to create compost as one of their game changers on climate. So it is scaling up.
Wow. So if I throw my banana peels in the garbage and it goes to a landfill, I am worsening climate change because methane releases.
Yeah, we really have to capture that food weight. It is essential. It's one of the most important things we can do. If you're familiar with Project Drawdown, Paul Hawkins' effort, I believe they named food waste capture as the 3 out of 100 strategies for taking on climate change.
Right, because you can do harm by throwing it in the garbage, or you can do
You can
a lot
help.
Of good.
Right.
Exactly. Okay. Next up, after a musical break, we will turn from agriculture to the economic and energy and other transformations that are suggested by the Green New Deal. I'm Julie Hantman on Tacoma Radio, WOWDLP 94.3 in Tacoma Park, with my guest Betsy Taylor of Breakthrough Strategies and Solutions, Turning to the Green New Deal. And that song, by the way, was the best I could imitate the green. That's called New Deal Blues by the Waco Brothers. So, you know, it
perfect.
It had the New Deal in it. Probably every listener has heard of the Green New Deal. It's a broad plan and developed, and you'll tell us by whom, but the face of it is by progressive Democrats in Congress, and to transform our energy economy, to promote environmental justice and fight climate change. Many Republicans are dead set against this and dead set on making fun of it and stopping it before it gets started. Betsy, what is the Green New Deal?
So the Green New Deal is a proposal, of course, that I think everyone probably knows, that was put forward by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Ed Markey, which is really a vision. It's a non-binding resolution that has over 100 co-sponsors in both parties, just Democrats at this point. And it is calling for an all-hands-on-deck transformation of our energy and food systems. And this is exactly what the science is demanding to happen. So it is sort of a warlike mobilization, as we did in World War II, where we basically made the impossible possible. We transformed things like our car production lines and the tank production in 6 months. That's the attitude it's bringing to this debate. And just to be clear, the Green New Deal is now working to develop a series of specific policies. There'll be like 10 to 12 bills.
You're deep into this. What's your role, by the way?
So I play multiple roles with it. I am on an advisory group. I was part of the there's a group called New Consensus that is charged by AOC and Markey to actually craft the very specific policy proposals. I'm part of that. They brought together experts and frontline community organizers. What exactly will be the details? And that's where we're at right now. I also serve informally to support Sunrise Movement.
Tell me again, the eye-rolling thing is this is broad and we can do this all in 10 or 11 or 12 years.
Well, I mean, the IPCC, the top scientists in the world are freaking out. We have an immediate planetary emergency. The climate threat is not a distant one. If you look actually at the details, we are in an extremely nonlinear situation. So the only rational thing to do is a non-incremental response. It is a bold all hands on deck, and that is exactly what they are calling for. It is being pushed by the youth. It is being pushed by young people who say, I mean, if you believe the science, by 2030, DC is going to be getting flooded. The Mid-Atlantic is very vulnerable. So we need to be acting, and we're kind of walking around like, oh, it's the warm weather's nice.
Right. Why, though, transform our economic system at the same time? Is that necessary and doable within a decade?
Well, it's the energy system, but when we transform that energy system, it means that there's the opportunity for a whole range of economic changes that allow for job creation and greater equity, which is critical. We have a climate emergency, but we also have an emergency in terms of jobs, in terms of fairness in our society, in terms of having the capacity to survive, honestly, for many people. The job situation is very, you know, the data shows, oh, jobs are increasing, but what kind of jobs?
You've trained some of the youth that we've seen come into the forefront here. You told me that must be heartening.
It is. Yeah. Several years ago, we began a program to support diverse young leaders in the climate movement, ranging from clean energy entrepreneurs and elected officials to frontline community organizers, labor faith. And we've brought them together over a period of 5 years, several cohorts, where we've worked to build deep relationships among them, as well as strategic skills and strategic collaboration. But if you look at Sunrise, if you look at New Consensus, if you look at a whole range of things, those people are right in the heart of it. So it's been fun for me.
Fantastic. So this is happening at a grassroots level, also a very top level in Congress. What can the average person do, in your view, or should do?
Well, our own Congressman, Jamie Raskin, is one of our great heroes and has been a mentor to AOC. Thank him over and over and over again. But also join Sunrise, contribute to Sunrise. get involved with pushing our senators to say, come on, don't just sign on, lead on this. There is a battle right now. The AOC has become the new person that the Fox is going after. She's the new Hillary. There's a massive attack on the Green New Deal. Oh, it's unreasonable. It's, you know, it's impossible. They're dreaming. In fact, it's exactly what we need to do. We need to address equity, jobs, and climate all together, and we need to do it right now. Oh. So you push, get part of, get, you know, join a group. You can join CCAN, but, you know, Sunrise is at the lead of this in terms of building power.
All right. Next up, we did soil, we did Capitol Hill. Now, next, we're going to go to spirit and how some people are connecting more to nature, faith, and spirituality to ground themselves in this tough time.
Rainbows have nothing to hide. So we've been told, and some choose to believe. I know they're wrong, wait and see. Someday we'll find it, the rainbow connection, the lovers, the dreamers, and me.
I'm Julie Hampman with my guest, Betsy Taylor of Breakthrough Strategies and Solutions on Tacoma Radio, WOWDLP 94.3 FM, and streaming online at tacomaradio.org. And now we're going to turn to climate change and spirit. I had insomnia for months when I first really got the climate change crisis we were facing. That was only 6 years ago. My kid was a year old. And I got into action. I'm still in action, but I'm living a split picture, probably like most people. I'm seeing news coverage of Nebraska being flooded, but I'm also often watching the Incredibles movie for the fourth or fifth time with my kid and eating popcorn. So it's not right here, right now, but I have this grave and overriding anxiety and fear and disconnectedness from maybe some of my neighbors and friends who aren't also feeling the same thing. So all of these mixture of thoughts and feelings, I'm sure many listeners have some of that too. You have a Quaker background and you've been in the trenches against climate change for decades. What helps you personally as you face all of this threats?
Well, that is a wonderful question, Julie. Thank you. Yes, I think anyone working in this space right now is holding this impossible information. Humans are not designed to hold the information we're being asked to hold, which is that the planet is warming, you know, 10 times faster than it has in 65 million years. For myself, there are several sources of strength. One is the natural world itself, and I think almost all of us, if we unplug from technology, get off the cell phone, get off the computer, my husband's laughing because he's pushing me to do this more, but go outside, get your hands in the soil, plant flowers, create bouquets, be with the trees. When you go to Sligo Creek, don't just run to get exercise, stop and sit on a rock and listen to the water. There's something soothing, but also meditation, contemplative prayer. I can go on, but I do think actually there's a tendency in this situation to be so afraid that we race away from it. I actually think looking at it and going into it and being quiet with it can be helpful.
You've mentioned there's a movement afoot, climate consciousness, that aims to sort of help people make these connections to nature and also to their faith, if any, or spiritual levels. Tell me about this movement just a bit. And there's a big conference happening in just a few weeks in Scotland, bringing
yes.
people all over the world from different walks of life. And
yes, yes. Yeah. In Iona, Scotland, there are 350 people will be gathering, and I believe the public can live stream into the event. If you go online and just plug in Climate Consciousness Conference, Iona, Scotland, you can find the details.
I think it's ccc19.org.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. And they're bringing together not just, you know, experts on climate, but also and organizers and advocates and policymakers, but musicians and artists and spiritual leaders. And I think they're working to sort of think, is there a way to tap our very deepest wisdom, our very deepest courage at this planetary moment to embrace what we're being called to do. I think there's a sense that our analytic, incremental, you know, carbon pricing, you know, let's get what we can policies, it's just not going to get us there. We need to tap, honestly, we need to tap fierce love, just the kind of love you talked about at the beginning that you have for your children and what brought you into this.
Wow, it sounds like all this can be a balm for people's souls and also maybe create that grounding so people can take more action together.
Yeah, I mean, I think faith is a very personal thing, and many, you know, feel that we're in a very secular time. But I think there are practices that let you lean into the universe as a very living thing, and however you define it, to somehow access some sort of loving presence that you can surrender into to feel safe.
What feeds my soul in particular is building community, connecting to other people, kind of like I said about the point of this program. So maybe that's another element to throw in there. It's not just nature and faith, but creating connections with the people around you.
And yeah, that can be both spiritual and pragmatic. I mean, the truth is we are going into a disruptive time no matter what. And so when you look at the data on resilience and climate, and there's many places working on this, like Miami, for example, the number one thing people should do to be resilient is to be connected. So whether it's New Orleans or DC, make sure you have a network of people that you're in touch with that can be supportive in times of, you know, derechos, but also that you can be in support of in sharing your deepest thoughts and fears and hopes.
Yeah. And if listeners aren't really there yet in terms of even understanding climate change or really beginning to talk about the different aspects, it's getting community together just to really talk it through and communicate,
right,
and then also bond over what you can do to help each other in those times.
Right. And the Chesapeake Climate Action Network does create some of those opportunities for more informal sharing. Some of that's happened at the local Presbyterian Church, local Delphi Quaker meeting, Unitarian Church on New Hampshire, but also just informally. And the city is beginning to facilitate some of that too.
Mm-hmm. And I'm seeing some initiatives pop up where you can even ask people to come into your living room with 10 friends and help you begin having that conversation.
Absolutely. And we probably need to be doing more of that, just gathering to say, where are you with this?
Mm-hmm. And more philanthropic attention probably to helping people to communicate.
Absolutely. There needs to be more support, not just for policy ideas and agendas like that, but for supporting networks of people who will be supportive of each other no matter what happens.
Mm.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we are near the end, Betsy. What do you think are the key takeaways from all the things we've talked about today?
I think we talked about soil, we talked about the Green New Deal as an all hands on deck, and we talked about spirit. And in some ways, they're all connected, because how do we get that strength to do what's required? And there's data now. I mean, this may sound a little out there, but there's now data, you can find it online, that if you go stand in your bare feet on soil, it gives you huge immune system protection, similarly with your hands. Your bare skin needs to be touching soil. And it's incredible what it does for you as an animal, as a human. And for myself, I also find being with the soil, it's kind of magical what happens with plants, with flowers, with crops. And it's kind of spiritual. You watch it like, wow, look what's mm-hmm. happening. And so I think one thing we could all do is just spend a little more time with that land, with that soil, taking care of it, but also to really look at it, like what's happening here? And from that, see how resilient the earth actually is, and never to underestimate what it can do and what it can do with a little help from us. So I feel like the big takeaway is if you're sitting it out, don't. You don't have to give your entire life to the climate fight, but give something, do mm-hmm. something. And usually when you do something, that leads you to do something else. And that is what is needed right now. Everybody, we need every single person helping with this. So I think part of it is seeing yourself as part of this creative group with a spirit of inquiry and love for the world and for community, where you just join in, meet with others. It's very Tacoma Park. This is what we're about. And if you're not part of it, there are many places to step in where you might find your group.
Mm-hmm. And there's a real neighborhood feel in Northeast, Northwest DC too.
Absolutely.
And people can come together around their places of worship or their civic organizations.
Absolutely. DC, there's some really exciting stuff happening in Silver Spring, Impact Silver Spring, and so many other groups pulling people together, which I think is really the most important thing right now.
Well, thank you, Betsy Taylor, for this wonderful conversation. Her site is breakthroughstrategiesandsolutions.com. Mm-hmm. So check that out. Thank you also to Brenda Platt from the Institute for Local Self-Reliance for having talked with producer Danya Abdulhamid about composting. And thanks, Danya, again, for editing that interview and working with me sight unseen on that. Thank you to Tacoma Radio for hosting this quarterly series.
You know, I just want to encourage listeners to go back to the programs that have been produced. I have listened in. They are outstanding. This is sophisticated work that's being done here by Julie. So please do come back and look at the archives on because some of them really look at climate impacts for DC, and I found it extremely informative.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, we did focus on flooding in the DMV and heat in the DMV last summer. We will end our conversation listening to Lin-Manuel Miranda and his tribute, along with many Latina and Latino artists' tribute to Puerto Rico. Stay tuned for Borderlines next here on Tacoma Radio.
Say it loud and there's music playing. Say it soft and it's almost like praying. It's almost like praying.
San Juan, Isabela.